Hello and welcome to this UKA Match podcast. In this podcast, we speak to Joe Hall from Bristol-based charity Motivation. During this podcast, Joe talks about how Motivation overcame some of the challenges of applying for a grant. She also covers how Motivation ran their two successful appeals and the impact that UKA Match had on both donations and the organisation as a whole. So I'm here today with Joe Hall, the Head of Fundraising and Communications at Motivation. Thanks for coming in today.
You're welcome.
So can you tell us a little bit about your UKA Match projects and a little bit more about Motivation?
Sure. So Motivation is a UK charity and social enterprise based here in Bristol. Our work enables greater independence and opportunity for disabled people in developing countries. And we achieve that through advancing the design and provision of wheelchair services and training in those countries that we operate. We've run two UKA Match appeals so far. The first one was back in 2016, which was called When I Grow Up. And that raised £260,000 to help disabled children in Uganda to grow up, stay healthy and dream big. And that was our strapline. And we reached around 1.5 million people with our messaging with that particular appeal. And 65% of donors that gave to it were actually new to Motivation, which was fantastic for us. We followed that up a couple of years later with the second appeal, Ready, Willing and Able, which exceeded its target by over 50% and raised £253,000 to help disabled people in Kenya to access employment. That appeal reached more people thanks to a Radio 4 broadcast that we had and reached some 3 million people and received support from Paralympian Adia Deputan and also was given support by the then Secretary of State, Penny Morden, who launched it in her speech to mark International Day of People with Disability. And I think on both of occasions, those appeals were successful because of the strong, powerful stories that we had of the beneficiaries that we used that became the face of both of those appeals, matched, I think, by the fact that the UK messaging really incentivised and engaged and inspired our donors.
So in terms of your application for a UK Match grant, did you find any elements of the application actually quite challenging?
Yeah, I would say from our perspective, the application process was more challenging than actually delivering the appeal itself. So it was the build-up and really, I think, having the confidence to go for it in the first place. When you read the guidance for the application form, I think it can be quite off-putting or overwhelming to see that you're asked to perhaps pull working groups together of different departments, so your PR team, your VIP celebrity team, your direct marketing team, as well as your programmes and your fundraising. And we simply don't have all that. We're a small organisation. But if you break it down and think strategically about what it is you want to achieve and the resources you have available to you, you really can make it work. It's not easy. You've got to dedicate a sort of proportion of your time to it. But we saw it as integral to our fundraising strategy because it gave us additional opportunities to engage and inspire and to steward our donors and new donors. I guess, put it into context, Motivation's annual turnover is between 3 and 5 million a year. 50% of that comes from trading. And whilst our voluntary income is growing, it's still a fairly small proportion of it. So our fundraising team at the time was made up of 4 individuals. So on the face of it, we weren't the sort of team you'd expect to be going for a UK Aid Match. But as I said, we thought about it long and hard. And because we felt that the projects that we had gave us strong content, strong visuals, and we really had belief in what we were doing in Uganda, for example, in the first country that we did the appeal for, that we really ought to go for it. And I won't lie, it was a bit of a punt going for it. It was a bit of a risk. And actually internally convincing colleagues that it was the right thing to do was one of the more challenging things that we had to face. But once you think about the benefits outweighing risks, then, you know, we just went for it. And you have to be bold. I think in terms of the application itself, what we had to do was pull a small working group together, which literally consisted of 3 people. So we had a member of our programmes team working with the Uganda office to co-design a strong project. We had one fundraiser who worked on the actual proposal. And then I worked on the communications campaign side of things in terms of pulling together communications partners, the messaging, and then thinking about the storytelling in terms of what we wanted to say. We kept it simple. We weren't overly ambitious, but what we felt is that we were offering perhaps something different. We couldn't compete with the big boys. We don't have the clout of, say, Sightsavers, CBN. We just can't compete with them. But what we offer DFID is something a little bit more niche, a bit more practical, a bit more tangible, And we utilised regional partnerships as well, which just gives a different element in terms of the government reaching out to local communities and new audiences, really. I think another perhaps challenge for us is the long lead times, and it's being aware that you're being asked to pull together projects that won't necessarily start for another 12 months. Equally, you're asking for communication partners to sign up and provide editorial, for example, which again might be 9-12 months down the line. For a lot of journalists, they're simply not going to commit to that. But the way we got around that was being really transparent, being honest about what we were up to, and again, just going back to the human interest stories and really identifying partners that we felt that we had a synergy with, that we could maximise our impact with, but it could offer them something as well for their audiences, their readers, for example. So for both of our appeals, we pitched at the lower end, I guess, for a DFID grant. So both of them were between £150,000 and £200,000 at the project design stage. And as I said, we utilised regional communication partnerships in addition to any national partners that we had.
So both your appeals utilised, you spoke about using local media and local events to engage your potential donors. Why did you do this, and what do you think the results were?
So I think it's fair to say Motivation's got a fairly low brand awareness here in the UK. We've got strong partnerships, we've got good brand awareness amongst our stakeholders, etc., overseas and within the sector. But when it comes to Joe Public on the street, then it is quite low. So we felt that one of the best ways to perhaps start to build that presence was to begin close to home and start with Bristol. So for both of our appeals, we identified local and regional media partners that could help tap into those audiences. And we've been in Bristol and the local area for over 15 years, but we've recently moved into the city centre in the last 18 months or so. So we were really mindful, I think, that the Bristol community does have a strong NGO network, quite a strong social conscience, is interested in learning about good news stories of organisations that are doing positive things in the community, both here in the UK and overseas. So we felt that, you know, Bristol would be great for us. But also we've got, I think, a good story in terms of operating out of Bristol. We have a huge global impact in terms of the work that we're doing. So we felt that it was worth talking about that. Plus our co-founder, David Constantine, he lives here in Bristol and he's often called upon by the media and is involved in lots of committees to talk about our work and as an advocate with disability himself, being a wheelchair user. So we felt we had the right ingredients really to reach out to the local community. We did that, first of all, with the When I Grow Up appeal, and we decided to do it again with Ready and Willing and Able because it would embed some of the messages that we'd already raised in the first appeal and build on that. And we did an analysis of postcodes for the Ready, Willing and Able appeal, and over 12% of donations actually came from the local area, which we were really, really pleased with and delighted that the community had really supported us. So the sorts of channels that we used were Bristol 24/7, the Southwest issue of the Metro, but we also looked at events that we could get involved in. So, for example, we were asked by Backwell, which is a local village outside of Bristol, to be their charity for their local festival. So we got involved there. I stood up on stage and spoke about the UKA match and our appeals, and that went down really well. But we also worked with University of West of England as well. So we're always looking and identifying opportunities that weren't your traditional media as well. So it wasn't just about editorial, but it was about footfall, it was about audiences, it was about getting the messages out as far as wide as possible. And also recognising that if somebody had perhaps seen a piece of editorial in the local newspaper, they might have heard about us at the local festival, or their son, daughter might have been at university. So you've got those opportunities and engagement points at multiple levels. And for us, that worked really, really well. It enabled us to leverage awareness locally that we could then also back up with some of the national partnerships that we aligned alongside it.
So in terms of the nuts and bolts of the delivery of the appeal, mm-hmm. First of all, how did you manage the actual delivery of content and materials? And which of the channels do you think performed best for Motivation, and why do you think this is?
Actually, most of the work that we produced was all done in-house. We can't afford agencies to do our copywriting or to do all of the design elements. So we do a lot of brainstorming, a lot of creative thinking within the team. And I feel really fortunate that the team bring multiple skills to the table. A lot of the writing we shared out amongst ourselves. And we also benefited in terms of photography from a couple of people, actually. our founder, David, he's a photographer himself, and he's able to go out and capture content on visits to countries, etc. We've also got a volunteer photographer who I pay for his expenses, but he offers his time, which he would normally charge at about £500, absolutely free. And he actually went out to Uganda and Kenya for us on both occasions and did this work, collecting fantastic content and stories and photographs that were then became the actual content of what we used. And some of the people that he met, Francis, Salome, Catherine, in Kenya, for example, became synonymous with our appeals. And what we did, we used very strong visuals, positive stories and photos to really drive what we were doing. And once we'd got key messages agreed and signed off by DFID, that was very much the bread and butter of what we used throughout all of our materials. We tried to have very consistent messages, very empowering messages, very positive messages, and made sure that everybody in the organisation was aware of what those messages were. So, for example, if they were to pick up the telephone and speak to a potential donor or a journalist, they knew exactly what the appeals were about, what we were looking for, and what an ask would be, for example. In terms of the second question around performance and channels, we had some very obvious successes in terms of reach. And what I would highlight, I think, in terms of opportunities to view was the BBC Radio 4 broadcast that we had, which for our second appeal, Ready, Willing and Able, was by far our biggest communications activity in terms of reach. That was a simple 3-minute broadcast, one of their normal traditional charity appeals that they run for different organisations. And we were lucky enough to have Adia Debatan narrate our appeal for us, which was 3 minutes long. And it introduced the story of Francis, who is one of the beneficiaries that we work with in Kenya. Now, he was a carpenter who suffered a spinal cord injury when he fell at work, working as a carpenter. And we told his story and talked about how once he'd come into contact with motivation and been through some of the training that we offered, how he turned his life around and actually started working again. Now, that appeal reached some 1.8 million people and was repeated during the course of the week that we had the appeal. And it was just fantastic for us. It raised around £16,000. And of those people that actually donated, 22% of them actually said they wanted to hear from us again. So in these times of heightened regulation, GDPR, it was really good to get positive consent from individuals who wanted to know more about our work. And we also had very positive feedback. It's not often that with a Radio 4 appeal that you actually get donors sending donations with comments, but a lot of them said that they were really inspired by the story of Francis and how Adi had narrated it. So that was great for us in terms of reach. In terms of donations and large donations, I have to say it was major donors and eligible trusts and foundations which were really key to our success. And they cited the UK Aid Match messaging as key to that. They wanted to see their donations maximised, and to have the doubling was what drove them to perhaps change their giving patterns, to give more money, and that was really, really important for us. And in terms of channels, it was actually the stuff that we wrote in-house, our own newsletters, our own tailored communications and proposals were the most successful. And I think the key there, you know, I've talked about content, it was about those human interest stories, but it's the fact that people give to people. And so the relationships that we've had with our existing donors has always been about ensuring we understand their motivations, that we're stewarding them, we're giving them the information they want, and then giving them these additional opportunities. And so UK Aid Match is perfect for that. And that's why I say it's really important to build it into your fundraising strategy. From these donors, I think that the trusts and foundations, we raised around £116,000 from them. So there's a big bulk of what we were doing with them. And we're still getting a lot of them asking us when we're going to get our next appeal, because they're keen to benefit again, or for us to benefit again. And I think what it really tells us is that if you combine strong messaging alongside the UK Aid Match messaging, and also make sure that it's combined with the strong stewardship, then you've got a really ripe opportunity to maximise your fundraising.
In terms of getting someone like a Paralympian like Paddy, who's got quite a big media presence, I mean, what advice would you give to other smaller organisations such as your own trying to leverage that kind of opportunity?
I think it's being really strategic and targeting people that you feel you have a real synergy with, that your story is going to resonate with their story. And so there was an obvious connection with Adi. He's done bits and pieces for us in the past. He's not done a lot, but it's about us not over asking. So I think that's key. It's about making sure whenever you reach out to a celebrity or an ambassador, that you've got a really clear idea of what you want from them, that you can demonstrate that you've got opportunities to support them as well, that they can benefit from it as well, if it's in terms of increased PR publicity, and just making it as easy as possible for them. So I don't think Addy would mind us saying that we work very closely with him in terms of putting the script together for Radio 4. And he was fantastic on the day. He's a professional, he's a broadcaster, he knows how to pitch things to audiences. And it's about being flexible. We worked directly through him and through his agent. And I think it's keeping things simple, being strategic, targeted and flexible.
Social media, how did you use that to leverage support for your campaign?
Well, social media for us is, I guess it's a relatively new area. We've always tried Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, but it hasn't been particularly consistent. And so the beauty of something like a UK Aid Match is it gives you one focal appeal that you can really harness all of your social media platforms around. And so we consciously made the decision for both appeals to make them very digital focused. And for us, that meant regular posts, tweets, almost daily in some instances. And we didn't see that as overkill because we saw it as an opportunity to really build the brand of each of those appeals. On the first appeal with When I Grow Up, we were able to secure the support of a communications agency in London. And they did some work with us completely free, pro bono, which was fantastic because they introduced us to apps and software that enabled us to create some films with user footage. So we were able to ask people here in the UK, but also overseas, not just in some of our focus countries, but more globally, to record their thoughts about what they wanted to be when they grew up. So a really simple message, because that was the theme of our appeal. We wanted to demonstrate that no matter where you are in the world, kids are entitled to grow up with big aspirations and dreams. And we really wanted to capture that. So we used this software, which meant that people anywhere could record a short film on their mobile phones. And then that was sent directly to the communications agency, who then spliced it all together to create short films for us. And so in that first appeal, we used those three short films that were a compilation of children talking about their dreams as the sort of the backbone of some of our social media. And that was really, really popular. We invested a little bit in terms of boosting some of the Facebook posts with some of our own paid for advertising. And it just meant our reach was really, really significant beyond anything we'd had before in terms of social media. And again, it was all about human interest. So letting our beneficiaries, our partners and our workforce out in the countries really bring the stories to life, to talk about their experiences, their positive experiences about the interventions that Motivation has at local, regional and national level. And then to complement that, we worked with different ambassadors, disability advocates, and we found that wheelchair users who are active bloggers were a really good source for us in terms of spreading the message, because they weren't just necessarily repeating or retweeting what we were doing, but some of them were going out and then writing editorial themselves. So the likes of Martin Sibley and Mick Scarlett are both UK advocates in the UK around disability, and they joined us and helped celebrate some of our appeals, which was really, really, really good.
How did you find that people donated as a result of the social media? So they go directly see a post and then go donate, or was it part of this? Because I know you were talking earlier about trying to just build awareness, like trying to hit potential donors with like three different pieces of communications, or is it more like that, more of an overwhelming, overarching campaign?
Overarching, really. Yeah. I mean, we did, like a lot of charities, most of our donations are still coming in through the post, the old-fashioned way, checks. It's really funny, but with the social media side of things, what we were trying to do is drive people to our website. So we had a really strong appeal pages on the website, and we did see an uplift there in terms of donations coming through the website, which we'd only revamped the year prior to the first UK Match appeal. So it was real new. It was very, very new for us. We were sort of testing the waters with the digital, with the website. And as I said, we did see an uplift there. But it was about the overall appeal and reaching out to both existing and new donors. With Radio 4, obviously that was postal donations coming in. Very few were coming to the website and doing things that way. It was very much the old-fashioned way. With the second appeal, social media, again, it was an outlet. It's a platform to almost have a dialogue with your supporters and your donors, rather than it being the mechanism which then makes them donate. They're still seeking you out through the website or picking up the telephone, or certainly our donors are. And it's something that we want to grow. We know that we need to monetize the social media activity. But at the moment, I think we're still at that stage where it's about dialogue and building a community of followers who are then inspired to take action in other ways. And that might be they would have gone along to an event, a local event, or they may have be a member of a trust or a foundation or a trustee and spread the word that way, or perhaps sponsored somebody that was taking part in an event during that time. And with, I mean, Ready, Willing and Able, one of our big success stories actually was we had a London Marathon runner who raised £25,000, all of which fell within the appeal period, which we could get doubled. And again, we didn't expect that. That wasn't something that we were planning. And we did a lot of social media around the marathon and his efforts, but actually it was his close contacts and friends. It's about people, again, giving to people. And that's been the real connection. So digital's good for awareness, but it's not always the mechanism that's enabling the donations.
So in terms of your campaign, what did you find? What was the focus of the content you created for them?
Okay, so Motivations work is very much about empowering disabled people so they're included and fully participate in society. And it's about giving disabled people the knowledge, confidence and tools so they can make informed choices about their life. So for us, what we really wanted to do is demonstrate disabled people as agents for change within their communities. And so what we wanted to do with our messaging was have very positive content. We focused on the use of bold images for photographs and used images of disabled people looking proud, happy and empowered. And that's really, really important for us because we also know that our donors and prospective donors are inspired by that. We don't use negative stories. That's just not what we're about. That's not one of our values. But equally, in terms of the storytelling, it's about hearing directly from disabled people, the individuals working with disabled people, and how we incorporate content from our in-country staff, for example. So it's very much the voices on the ground telling the story and utilising that. And I've mentioned earlier Francis, a carpenter from Kenya. It was about identifying three or four key characters that had strong stories, positive outcomes to their stories as well, that could really demonstrate the value of UK aid and prove that it does actually work. And I know that that's one of, you know, the driving factors around what why did it do UK aid match. It's about demonstrating to the UK public the value of overseas aid. And so what we try to do is mirror that through some of our messaging. So it's obviously a constant challenge for UK charities, NGOs, thinking about some of the negative press around UK aid. For us, when we did our first appeal, When I Grow Up, it was at the same time that the UK voted to leave the EU. And I think the Mail on Sunday had just launched a campaign. I'm getting quite a few signatures about UK aid. So it was quite a highly politicised time that we were doing our appeal. But for us, I think it's about recognising you can't win over everybody. There will be some people who like the type of work you do and the others that won't. So for us, it's about sticking to our principles, about being bold and confident, and demonstrating the positive impact that we can have and that UKA can have. And it's not about handouts, it's about empowering individuals. And certainly that was a message that time and again we know that our donors like. And I think our second campaign, Ready, Willing and Able, was particularly strong on this and used that strapline of Ready, Willing and Able to demonstrate that, that disabled people are ready for change, that they're willing to support themselves and are able to contribute to society in a very positive way. And for us, that was really key. And despite, you know, some of the challenging environment economically, socially, that we face and are involved in terms of these appeals, we've had really, really positive feedback. And our donors have cited that they're pleased to support these appeals. They're glad to see the government supporting charities in this way. And so what we've tried to do is really maximise the positive goodwill that is out there.
So you've talked a bit about your overall messaging as an organisation, but did you find that the actual UK Aid Match messaging and having the UK Aid Match brand, if you will, behind you, did that affect the way that people donated?
Absolutely, yeah, without a doubt. The incentive to have your donation, your gift doubled, made a huge impact. And what we actually did when we had the opportunity to, is we asked donors, so if we perhaps spoken to someone on a telephone or asked for feedback, we asked them that very question, and what difference does this messaging make? And I could read out a couple of quotes to you from some real-life examples. So an existing donor said to us, "I think it's a great scheme. I like that it's supporting worthwhile charities, but also well-organised charities. I can choose that it goes to a charity I know has a history of delivering and that I can trust." Then another, a foundation told us, I've enclosed a cheque for $25,000 this time instead of $10,000 to help make the most of the When I Grow Up appeal, which is, that's brilliant. You just couldn't ask for more, really. And then we would get from individual donors, for example, they would use very positive language, that this is wonderful, that they're delighted, this is absolutely first class. And one couple said to us, we hadn't planned to give this Christmas, but knowing that we'd be doubled prompted the donation. So again, it's doing the job for us. It really did make a difference. One donor actually turned up on our doorstep because they were so concerned they were going to miss the deadline of getting their donation match. They turned up with the donation in an envelope. And again, you just don't expect these things. But I think it just shows the power of the UK match messaging. And then we had another donor, a major donor, a significant donor for us, shifting his giving patterns so that he could, I think, see his investment. He saw it as an investment being, you know, maximised. And so we really played to this. And you just have to think about your fundraising calendar across the year. And I talked earlier about the long time frames. And you do have to balance that need to perhaps hold off some donations or talk to donors in a different way and say to them, you know, we may have this opportunity and you can benefit and we can benefit more. We can do, you know, extra with your money. So it can be, you know, difficult. So if you're as an organisation, you don't have huge reserves that you can fall back on, then, you know, you have to get that balance right. But for us, so far, it's worked really well.
Other than the way people donated, mm-hmm. did you see being part of two UK match appeals, did that affect your organisation in any other ways other than the way people were donating?
Yeah, I would say it did, actually. I think internally, it really galvanised the whole organisation behind what was really, you know, a couple of really tangible appeals. And that was particularly true of the first one we did, because I mentioned earlier, it was sometimes you have to challenge perceptions internally that these are good things to do, that it's worth taking a risk sometimes. And actually to see everybody get behind the messaging and see it as an exciting external piece of work, it was really great. It did boost our unrestricted fundraising, certainly. So we took the option in terms of our appeal, raised general funds for the work that we did. And then the match funding was earmarked for the projects, the specific projects in Uganda and Kenya, respectively. Definitely enabled us to build loyalty with existing donors, but obviously it gave us a huge boost in terms of our acquisition. Both appeals, we saw new donors coming on board, and obviously the hard work now begins and we need to retain those donors. But again, that's excellent. It also helped us to reactivate old lapsed donors. In the first appeal, 10% of the donors were actually lapsed, hadn't given over in the last 4 years. So again, fantastic tool for us. And it's not something we perhaps would have been able to achieve without the UK messaging behind us. I think it also gave us that opportunity to proactively go and seek new stories, new content. It gave us a reason, a rationale to do that. I mentioned the photographer. His images have had a huge longevity as well. We're still utilising those. And that's been great for fundraising in general, these very positive, strong stories. But I think more than anything is the realisation and of the importance of having an appeal that pulls everyone together. And actually, it's been our most successful fundraising in terms of return on investment when you collaborate as an organisation. I know that sounds a little bit obvious and simple, but I think it took the UK Match Appeals and this opportunity to really demonstrate that to us. And so that's made me shift the way we do some of our fundraising, looking at how we focus more on that appeal focus, rather than individual little campaigns that are more piecemeal. By getting everyone singing off the same hymn sheet, as it were, and utilising the same imagery and branding, really, really makes a difference. So even if we weren't to get another UK match appeal, so we're waiting to find out if we've got our third one, we would still be looking to do these bigger public appeals, because it really does benefit us as an organisation.
Thanks for listening to this UK Match podcast. Don't forget, we have more learning resources on the website, and if you think there is a subject that you would like to have covered, send us an email at ukamatch@manyondaniels.com.